Governor Peter Shumlin says the U.S. Supreme Court decision upholding the Federal Affordable Care Act paves the way for Vermont to implement a single-payer health care system in 2017. We have two stories tonight, one from VPR's John Dillon on how the court decision clears the way for Vermont to receive federal money to make coverage more affordable. But first, VPR's Bob Kinzel looks at how the ruling will affect Governor Shumlin's plan.
Let's hear it for the United States Supreme Court.
Yeah. That's Governor Peter Shumlin speaking to a group of single-payer advocates in Montpelier shortly after the decision was announced.
And all I can say is we are just warming up. That's our message. Vermont is going to be the first state in the country to be a place where health care is a right and not a privilege.
The governor then walked over to a press briefing with reporters. He said the ruling is very good news for the state.
Here's what matters. Vermonters, good news. $400 million of federal money to help you pay for insurance you can't afford. Hundreds of millions of dollars of federal money to help us build the system we need to have the first thoughtful single-payer healthcare system in America.
Anya Rader-Wallach is the chairwoman of the Green Mountain Care Board, the group that oversees virtually every aspect of healthcare in the state. She was pleased by the court's decision.
We can now move ahead with greater certainty about the framework laid out by the feds and the resources provided by them to expand coverage and implement other parts of our health reform plan.
The court's ruling means that health care will be a key issue in this year's gubernatorial race. Republican candidate Randy Brock thinks there are still too many unanswered questions about Shumlin's plan.
We're moving forward full speed ahead in Titanic care toward the fog, toward these objects in the water that are below the surface that our captain who's piloting the ship doesn't seem to see. And I'm concerned that we are going to hit that iceberg and sink.
Governor Peter Shumlin says his overwhelming victory and gains by other Democrats show that money in politics matters less in Vermont than around the country. The governor renewed his commitment to single-payer health care, but says he plans no major changes to his agenda during the next 2 years. VPR's John Dillon has more.
Shumlin held his first post-election news conference at the Dynapower Corporation in South Burlington, a manufacturer of electricity storage devices used by the renewable energy industry. It's the kind of business the governor says he wants to promote through a green jobs agenda. But as the governor worked the floor of the manufacturing plant, shaking hands and chatting with workers, it seemed like the campaign was still on.
How are you?
Sally?
Good to meet you.
I travel from Roxbury.
Oh, great. Things are coming back. We're getting it back. You guys have been so great. Did you get flooded?
Shumlin reminded the Roxbury resident that he had visited the flood-ravaged community after Tropical Storm Irene. The governor's response to that tragedy probably made him hard to beat in the 2012 election. Shumlin crushed his opponent, Republican Randy Brock, by about 20 points. And the governor says his victory, and that of other Democrats in Vermont, shows that voters here are not swayed by political action committees or expensive ad campaigns.
Listen, what Vermonters did yesterday was separate the political junk from the truth and reward and elect Vermonters from all parties who they were convinced were actually going to work for them. They didn't buy the big money. They didn't buy the distortions. They looked at the record. And they chose those elected officials who they thought would best continue the momentum that we have begun.
The governor said his agenda would remain focused on education, jobs, health care, and energy policy.
Vermont got its first presidential visit in 17 years today. President Obama noted that no other state has gone so long without a presidential appearance.
So we decided that today we are going to reset the clock.
The president spent a little more than 4 hours in the state to headline two fundraisers. We have two reports tonight. First, we turn to VPR's Kirk Carapeza, who was at a rowdy rally at the University of Vermont.
President of the United States, Barack Obama!
President Obama got a resounding welcome from the 4,500 supporters who paid at least $44 apiece to crowd into the UVM athletic complex.
Oh, this is a good crowd here in Vermont.
Vermonters have waited a long time for this. President Obama's visit to Vermont was the first by a sitting president since Bill Clinton was here in 1995. The president said his supporters have only just begun to see what change looks like. And he highlighted what he calls the signature bill of his term in office.
And yes, change is the health care reform that we passed after over a century of trying.
The Supreme Court has dissected that bill this week and will decide whether it's constitutional. President Obama says health care is a basic American right, and he laid out what he says is at stake in this election.
That's what we're fighting for. That's the choice in this election. This is not just your usual run-of-the-mill political debate. This is the defining issue of our time, a make-or-break moment for the middle class. That's what we got to fight for.
In these stump speeches, President Obama is full of optimism about the economy, and he says his administration is still prepared to restore it.
Maple sugaring is winding down in many parts of Vermont. It's nearly over at Rutland High School, too. Students there tapped nearly 40 trees as part of an effort to incorporate more hands-on, field-based learning. Ninth-grade teachers teamed up and incorporated sugaring into everything from theater, music and social studies, to math and English.
Good morning. I'm just stoking the arch here. Before you leave, we'll have a good steady boil going here, and we'll start adding fresh sap. Could somebody tell me why the boiling point of maple syrup is 219 or even sometimes more degrees Fahrenheit? Why would it be different than water? It's boiling. Boiling is boiling, right?
More stuff in it.
Is it more dense?
Stuff? Like Legos? I'm Mike Stannard. I'm an earth science teacher of freshmen at Rutland High School. And we're using sugaring as a focal point to learn about all aspects of sugaring and how it affects Vermont and how it was a part of our history and how it should be a great part of our future.
This is one of our tasks. First thing we do to make it is we have to drill a hole in the tree, and you put it in about an inch and a half, and then you actually put the tap into the tree. And
I'm Erin Perry, and I'm in ninth grade.
I'm Shannon Adams, and I'm in ninth grade.
I'm Kelsey Knowles, and I'm in ninth grade.
Yeah, the actual way the bucket is, how the lid's connected to the tap, it was invented right here in Rutland.
Okay, let's go to this tall one over here, guys.
Right here, Nick.
Hold it steady, Nick.
How much?
We're just, we got sap.
Yeah. Nick, how much?
How much?
Okay, so same thing. Got to get a measurement before
two.
You.
Burlington's candidates for mayor are busy scrambling for votes ahead of next week's election, so VPR's Kurt Carapeza went out to learn what voters are saying.
The sense you get from many voters across the city is that they're frustrated. Some are even angry.
I would like to have, you know, somebody in City Hall that's going to tell it like it is and get things accomplished.
Retired pharmaceutical agent Kevin Sleeper was born and raised in Burlington. As he gets his morning coffee at a corner store in Burlington's South End, he says he hasn't decided yet, but
right now I'm leaning towards Kurt Wright.
Many Kurt Wright supporters, like John Pijanowski, sound more excited about replacing progressives.
There's been basically a stranglehold on city politics in Burlington by the progressive leadership. More than ever, it's time for a change.
Pijanowski sits in the back of the store, reading the Boston Herald and wearing a New York Giants sweatsuit. Pijanowski voted for Wright in each of his previous two campaigns for mayor, and he will again next Tuesday.
And I think it's really going to take a bold leadership that Kurt Wright offers to get us out of this mess that we're in.
That mess includes $50 million in pension debt, another $17 million general fund gap because the city used public funds to bail out Burlington Telecom. Mayor Bob Kiss decided against seeking another term, and for the first time in decades, no progressive is in the race.
We turn now to the Irene effect 1 year later. Irene may have hit Vermont a year ago now, but the reminders of the epic storm remain on the landscape all over the state. For many, the reminders are also psychological and emotional. In Northfield, for example, homeowners who are part of a FEMA buyout program have learned that it will be fall before they see any money for their storm-damaged homes. As VPR's Lynn McRae reports, they're grateful that the end is in sight, but for some, the months of waiting have been personally trying.
We realize this is a complicated program for many folks, and there are a lot of moving parts.
At a meeting in late June in Northfield, residents who've applied to the federal home buyout program got a status update from Ray Doherty of Vermont Emergency Management.
Once we get the green light from FEMA, the town, in this case Michelle, will get the subgrant agreement from our agency, and then the buyout process can start. So I would.
For nearly an hour, representatives from various state agencies and organizations reviewed timelines and details of the buyout program. The goal is to buy properties that are in danger of flooding again in the future and put them off limits to redevelopment.
After you close, they will demolish the property, and the property will then remain green space in perpetuity, owned by the town. Let me answer any questions you might have.
Among the homeowners in Northfield who've applied to the buyout program are Mike and Bonnie Pemberton.
Could we purchase a house now if we had the chance to? Or do they recommend waiting until this whole buyout process is over with?
The couple is anxious to get back into a home of their own. They lived in their house on Water Street for 34 years and had only a few years left to pay on the mortgage. Bonnie Pemberton says it's hard to think about taking on a whole new mortgage as they get closer to retirement.
Our plan was we'd be mortgage free.
Right.
So, you know, so to go and live on your Social Security and whatever else you have and have a mortgage, most folks at that stage don't. That's one of our biggest challenges moving forward.
The Pembertons consider themselves lucky, though. The day after Irene hit, a doctor offered the couple the use of his second home in Northfield.
I've owned a part-time mowing business for years, and this is one of my clients, and he called. And he offered a house to stay in. Don't worry about it. We don't use it enough. Then he said, you and your family move in for as long as you want.
Grateful for the offer, the Pembertons figured they'd be into a new house by June at the latest. Now they worry about wearing out their welcome. They're also anxious about how they'll ever be able to replace the home they had made with more than three decades of sweat equity.
And in just 1 month, a folk artist in Montpelier who prints Eat More Kale t-shirts has raised nearly $90,000 to make a film about his ongoing legal battle with a fast food chain whose slogan is Eat More Chicken. As VPR's Kirk Carapezza reports, now he's preparing to produce a documentary about corporate bullying.
Over the past 4 weeks, Bo Muller Moore has used Facebook and Twitter and the online funding platform Kickstarter.com to reach his goal. And he says the donations rolled in from across the globe.
Everywhere from Luxembourg to Germany to New Zealand to, of course, Vermont, the Deep South, the Far West, you name it. It's really amazing.
Last December, there was a flood of PR and press over Muller Moore's battle with the fast food chain Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A said his T-shirts infringe upon their trademark for Eat More Chicken. Governor Peter Shumlin came to his side, launching Team Kale.
Chick-fil-A, get out of the way, because we're going to win this one.
Then in January, a local filmmaker approached Muller Moore about telling his story on the big screen. In this age of Occupy Wall Street, Muller Moore says he wasn't surprised by the outpouring of support because he thinks people identify with his struggle.
Everybody knows somebody that's been bullied by a corporation, it seems. Everybody can relate to this one way or another. And I really think that people are glad that someone's going to stand up and be a spokesperson for it.
It's estimated that one in five Vermont children is unsure at some point during the week where his or her next meal is coming from. That's called food insecurity. But for an increasing number of kids, at least one or two meals will come right out of their own backpacks. Every Tuesday afternoon, volunteers at the Hope Store, a thrift shop in Lindenville, fill donated backpacks with donated food. A few days later, Dave Hilfinger, a guidance counselor at the Linden Town School, picks them up.
So open a backpack, and inside there's a bag of Doritos, cut green beans, a couple boxes of macaroni and cheese, and then these two little boxes of milk. that they can use.
There's also a loaf of bread, ramen noodles, and a box of cereal. Hilfinger knows that if it weren't for these backpacks, some students would arrive at school on Monday morning too hungry to learn.
Students who are hungry have behavioral and academic challenges. I've seen it many times where a student is struggling. May come to my room or to our refocus room and request something to eat, and after they eat, they calm down and are in much better shape. But I know in this area especially, we have, I believe, around 70% of our students on free and reduced lunch.
That's more than 300 children. This year at the Linden Town School, 14 get the backpacks. The packs go directly to their bus drivers, who hand them over as discreetly as possible as students get off. But at least one student, 12-year-old Hunter Sharon, is proud to carry his. In the small, drafty farmhouse he shares with his parents and two siblings, his mother, Ray Lynn, says he loves unpacking and passing out the goodies. And for him, that's a welcome change.
He was hoarding food. So this was a way of him seeing that, yes, he does have the box of spaghetti or the granola bars or the little things of milk or whatever, that he knows I definitely have that and he can take that at any time and use it.
Cruise down Airport Drive in South Burlington and take a right on Dumont Avenue. Side by side, you'll see several vacant one-story homes that were recently purchased by the airport. Yellow demolition permits hang in their windows. Junk is scattered across their yards.
It's a big hardware store.
That's David Bouffard. He stands outside his house in the middle of Dumont Avenue, surrounded by abandoned homes. This is a zone where the noise from airport operations is deafening enough that the plan is simply to abandon the neighborhood and demolish it. Bouffard doesn't even seem to notice the noise anymore. As commercial airplanes fly overhead, he says that he has strong bonds to this neighborhood.
This is where I grew up. This is where all my friends were. I mean, I played wiffle ball in that yard. I played hockey across the street.
Now, the 32-year-old real estate agent lives here with his three kids, and he says he won't sell to the airport.
I don't want to move. I'll stay as long as I can. I don't care if they offer me $10 for my house at the very end. We just put $150,000 addition on before this plan came into effect. And then a year later, they want to buy houses. Oh, well, there's no eminent domain yet. Can't force you out.
The airport commission says it's not trying to force anyone out, but it has drawn up maps that show where the noise is the worst. It's part of a Federal Aviation Administration program to relocate residents like Bouffard from these rundown neighborhoods to give the airport more room for the noise.
For several years now, White River Junction has been trying to spruce itself up and bring more economic vitality to the old railroad town. It became an artsy place with the Center for Cartoon Studies and Northern Stage. That initiative seemed to go slightly off track, though, when a big-name music venue closed last month. But now, as VPR's Charlotte Albright reports, Tupelo Hall is making a surprise comeback.
Some say Tupelo, which also has a music hall in Londonderry, New Hampshire, may have been too ambitious at its Vermont site. It tried to book such big names as David Bromberg and Judy Collins and charged accordingly high prices. Tupelo built a state-of-the-art stage in a former railroad freight house. Mike Davidson owns the building. He says those marquee acts were well worth the price of admission, but now he's partnering with the venue's management on a different business plan. Tupelo is important enough to save, he says, in a restaurant in Lebanon, New Hampshire, where he's also redeveloped buildings.
But what we're going to start to do is bring more local acts into the room and more local arts of different types. We might work with theater groups who need a sound stage. We might work with artists who want to record there. At the same time, we would do more fundraisers.
And weddings and bar mitzvahs. Davidson's list of possible new uses is long, and he's investing his own money to rescue Tupelo in hopes that the company will, in his words, either use it or lose it as the economy limps into recovery.
It's been a tough couple of years, but, you know, we're not going to just fold up the tent and go home.
Tupelo's rebirth is good news to Skip Szymanski, who owns an upscale restaurant called Elixir, tucked into the other end of the former freight house. Szymanski says weekend business is good with or without Tupelo, but he says weekday concerts do bring in extra customers. Still, he says Tupelo is not the only game in town. For example, Northern Stage supplies a hungry theater crowd.
and White River itself's growing. You see more businesses move into the area. The Resource Systems Group, Maponix, all have moved in here recently, and they keep growing. Ibex is up the hill. A lot of people are finding out this is a great place to be and a great place to do business.
71 years ago, a 24-year-old woman from Essex Junction designed a monument in Middlebury. It was during the Depression, and the monument was built by the Works Progress Administration to honor Emma Hart Willard, a local luminary and pioneer in the education of women. But ironically, as a woman in a male-dominated society, the designer got no credit. Now, as VPR's Kurt Carapezza reports, she's finally being publicly recognized for her work.
Marion Guild says today, at 95 years old, she's no longer jaded about being jilted.
I gave up worrying about it long ago, tell you the truth. This has just been a lucky break.
A break spurred by her niece, Leslie Tucker, who in the spring wrote a letter to Middlebury town officials explaining how her aunt's boss, Pierre Zwick, had taken all the credit for designing the Emma Willard Monument. The Middlebury Select Board took action immediately by doing what boards do. It passed a resolution.
It was really, really unbelievable.
Tucker says she wanted to set the record straight about her aunt's role in designing the monument, which was dedicated here in 1941, just off Route 7. It was on this site in 1807 that Willard gave the earliest collegiate instruction for women in America. In her letter to the Select Board, Tucker supported her aunt's case with accounts published in the Burlington Free Press that showed Pierre Zwick, pressured by the public, had in fact acknowledged Guild as the designer. Tucker says Middlebury's action should be seen as inspiration for others.
Even though it took 71 years, it happened. There are tons of people, women artists and minority artists and musicians that have not been recognized, and I think that any justice can be righted at any time.
At a ceremony in the town gym earlier this week, for the first time, Middlebury publicly recognized Guild as the designer of the monument.
Thank you for coming. You're welcome. You take care. Thank you for coming.
This is an Irene story with a happy ending. Also, it's the story of how one spot on this earth can be so special to someone that they'll hang on no matter what. Even if that spot is a postage stamp-sized patch of land wedged between a dusty back road and a little rock-strewn brook. It's the story of a 72-year-old Braintree man who lives largely on a $700 a month Social Security check, whose small house, except for one little section, was swept away, piano, wood stove, clawfoot, bathtub and all, on August 28th.
For a new day, it's nice and bright, isn't it?
A man who likes his music loud and melodramatic.
I love a dramatic music. God, I like the drama in things, you know.
For David Atkinson, the drama in Irene reached a crescendo at 3:30 on that August Sunday afternoon when he watched his house disappear downstream. Along with it went a good chunk of Atkinson's little quarter-acre lot. What was left was a strip of land barely wide enough to double park on and a small addition Atkinson had built years ago. Atkinson was left with little more than his optimism that things would turn out okay.
I look at everything positively. There's got to be a reason why it's happening, and there's got to be a good reason.
Did you think that when Irene happened,
yeah,
or did it take a while to come around
to
feeling that way?
No, right from the start.
Atkinson's attitude may seem wrong-headed to some people, but it's pretty unshakable. Despite his sense that things would work out, he felt a lot of uncertainty in the beginning.
There was a lot of time when I didn't know what my future was going to be. I had so many people pulling me in different directions. I had two people offer me land, free land, to build on.
At first, Atkinson stayed with friends. Then he moved into the tiny addition that Irene had left behind. He got $30,000 from FEMA to rebuild the house. He says the town wanted him to take a FEMA buyout for an additional $9,000 and move somewhere else.
But what could I do with $39,000? Where could I go and start from scratch? I couldn't do that.
To that question, where could I go, many of us might answer anywhere, and not just because the place might flood again, but because it's hard to see the attraction to this little smudge of land locked between hills so steep that the sun doesn't hit it for 2 months in the winter. But Atkinson feels differently.
Yeah, let's go outside and we can hear the brook too, probably. I love it here. I mean, I love this brook. My brother's ashes are in the brook. His wife's ashes are in the brook. My mother visited here several times. So, I mean, this is, it's like my history is here, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but how do you feel about this brook now, now that you know what it's capable of?
I still love it, because it was only one day it was horrendous, but all the rest of the time, it's, look at it, it's just a little puny little thing, you know? I don't know how many more years I've got, but I like to think I'll be gone before the next one comes.
It turned out Atkinson badly underestimated how much money he'd have to rebuild. Friends and strangers made donations, a yard sale raised $5,000 for him, Bethany Church in Randolph gave him another $5,000 and helped him apply for grants. In the end, with the FEMA money, it all added up to about $60,000.
There's been so many people helping, it's just impossible to make a list. Well, I did send thank you notes to 125 people.
Atkinson's new house is a single room full of windows. A carpenter did the exacting work while Atkinson pitched in where he could. The furniture is donated, bartered for, or purchased secondhand.
In our series, The Irene Effect, one year later, we return today to the small Rutland County town of Pittsfield, which in the weeks after the storm became an example of a community coming together. Flooding along Routes 100 and 107 cut local residents off from the rest of the state for weeks. Many parents sent their children to live with other families so they could go to school. Still, residents pulled together, sharing news and giving each other support at a daily barbecue on the town green. But as VPR's Nina Keck reports, the recovery has been more difficult than the immediate aftermath of the storm.
It's lunchtime, and the pit stop, the local deli, gas station, and mini grocery, is hopping.
Bob, how are you?
Owner Roger Stevens greets and schmoozes with customers like he's hosting a party. So it's not surprising that he helped organize the now famous post-Irene barbecues.
It was not so much the food, but the community every day. A lot of people, I know people called me and everybody else in this town and said, hey, we're going to come there and we're going to get you out of there. And I think we all had the same thought. Where would we want to be? We don't have any power, and we might not drive out of here for a little while, and we might not smell too good because our laundry's not done, but this is really where we want to be. So we'll have lunch together.
Many in town, like Marion Abrams, say being together made it a lot easier to cope. Abrams stands on what used to be her lawn.
We're in the yard behind my house, right by the branch of the Tweed River that runs behind my house. And you see our yard and you see this river, and it's shocking to see. But our house is still standing.
Right after the storm, when no one could get in or out and power and cell phone service were down, Abrams says an amazing thing happened in Pittsfield.
People just did what they were able to do. Everybody, you know, immediately.
The guys with excavators and tractors went to work moving debris. People with medical skills set up a clinic in the town library. Restaurant owners cooked. Parents set up a school on the green. Erica Hurd stands on the town green and points to where she cut hair in what jokingly became Salon Irene.
It brought comfort to people because I'm the shrink with the sink. So people started talking, and it gave them a chance to relax and have some quiet because we'd been running at such a high level for so many days.
A few weeks after Irene, Marion Abrams remembers seeing a neighbor drive a backhoe onto her property to move some rocks. Another storm was coming, and people knew her home was vulnerable.
You watch the news, and you feel like everybody's out to get everybody else. And I felt like people are good. And this is so good for my kids to see that when you see that your neighbor needs help, you just step up and you just do it.
With its vibrant village and distinctive stone architecture, the Windsor County town of Chester has a charm that translates into dollars. The shops and boutiques that line Main Street thrive on tourism. But there's one sign of economic growth that some residents aren't so happy about. Dollar General, the large national retailer, wants to build a store at the edge of the village. At 9,100 square feet, it would be by far the largest retailer in Chester. Sean Cunningham is with the group Smart Growth Chester.
It's out of scale, it's not with the character of the town, and we're concerned about the businesses in town because there are a number of businesses that this would compete with, kind of unfairly. I mean, it's like asking a bantamweight to crawl into the ring with a heavyweight.
Cunningham's group is urging the town's Development Review Board to reject Dollar General's application.
Cunningham argues that the national chain brings little to the town's economy in terms of jobs or revenue. Dollar General hopes to build several stores in Vermont this year, in addition to the 15 it already has. Another large national chain, Family Dollar, wants to add at least 7 more stores to the 9 it already has in Vermont. Across the country, business is booming for dollar stores. Joshua Braverman is a spokesman for Family Dollar.
We are definitely in a growth mode and are looking forward to continuing to bring the value and convenience that we provide in our stores to more communities around the country.
Braverman says Family Dollar's core customers are single women heads of household who earn less than $40,000 a year. But he says that demographic is expanding and creating more opportunities for the company to build new stores. Many dollar stores are located in strip development or standalone buildings outside of town.
The tax would be roughly a penny per ounce, so a 2-liter bottle of sugar-sweetened soda would cost an additional 64 cents. Peter Sterling is the coordinator of the Alliance for a Healthier Vermont, a coalition of 30 healthcare and consumer groups. He says there's no question that excessive consumption of soda can lead to serious health problems.
The reason the tax is people are consuming too much, and it really is having an adverse impact on health, particularly for kids. For children who drink an extra can or glass of soda a day, it increases their chance of becoming obese by 60%, also increases their chance of getting diabetes.
Sterling says the tax would raise roughly $27 million a year, and he says this money would be allocated to 3 important initiatives.
The proposal is, one, to help lower healthcare costs for programs like Dr. Dinosaur and Catamount Health. And then the other parts of the proposal would be to subsidize the cost of buying fresh fruits and vegetables for low-income people. And third would be to do a public education campaign on the dangers of obesity, how to decrease obesity, and importantly, the link between excess sugar-sweetened beverage consumption and obesity in Vermont.
Tropical Storm Irene continues to have a major impact on Vermonters. That was the message today when state officials delivered their Irene Recovery Status Report. VPR's Steve Zind has our story.
A long line of state officials enumerated all the progress made since Irene hit Vermont last August. But their message was, much more work remains. The current estimate of Irene damage is $733 million. The money is coming from federal, state, and private sources. The state share of the Irene bill is currently $110 million. The number is likely to change, but it isn't clear how much. Administration Secretary Jeb Spaulding says the largest part of the state's cost, $75 million, is related to upgrading the state office complex in Waterbury and replacing the Vermont State Hospital. Spaulding says plans for the projects are extensive and complicated.
We are in the middle of the biggest challenge that the state of Vermont has ever had with its own infrastructure.
Because of the complexity, Spaulding says it's not clear how much FEMA will pay toward the cost of the psychiatric hospital and Waterbury office buildings. Officials say even after insurance and FEMA payments, approximately 800 households still have needs associated with losses from Irene. Many are depending on donations still being collected by the statewide disaster recovery group. Chris Graff is on the group's board.
The biggest problem we face right now is that for many Vermonters, Irene is so far in the rearview mirror that when we go and say, we need money, they say, why? That's last year's story.
A bad summer for water quality in Lake Champlain seems to be getting worse. Over the past week, hot weather, low water levels, and a huge bloom of blue-green algae have combined to cause a massive fish kill in Missisquoi Bay. BPR's John Dillon has this report.
The waves lapping on the east shore of Missisquoi Bay are a strange turquoise teal color. They're thick with blue-green algae.
How you doing, Darren?
Good.
Lived here all my life.
This sunny, late summer day would be perfect for swimming or boating. But Darren Defoe says he's only launched his boat once in the past few months. He's outside on the dock with his family listening to music, but he's not going in the water.
Me and my stepfather used to test this water and send it to the state of Vermont back 25 years ago when it was just speckles of the green, and look at it now.
Out in the bay, a catfish floats belly up. Overhead, seagulls and turkey vultures circle looking for a free meal. The blue-green algae release a toxin that can sicken people and pets. Defoe says he can't remember a worse year for water quality.
here we are. We live in Vermont. We live on a lake. We pay a high tax to have yuck and stink. And you don't even want to sit outside anymore, you know.
Just over the border in Philip.
Inside, it's a classic country store with a worn hardwood floor, a wood stove, crowded rows filled with all manner of goods, and a lunch counter with a line of chrome-trimmed stools. On a quiet afternoon this week, a couple of kids just out of school for the day drifted in for chocolate milkshakes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Have a good one.
As the coolers hum away behind the deli counter, the store's longtime owners sit at a nearby table sipping coffee and reflecting on their decision to close.
It really has to do with how close to the edge we've been for a long time.
That's Carolyn DeChico.
Irene hit, and our fall business was totally lost. And then to be followed immediately with a winter with no snow. It just hurt us so much.
DeChico and her partner Kim Furlong are the owners of the Barnard General Store. Furlong says it's a sad feeling to be the ones to lock the doors after 180 years of continuous operation. They've tried hard to keep the business running. At one point, they sold the building and the land it's on just to stay afloat. Furlong says they're leaving with little to show materially for 18 years of 70-hour weeks.
We walk away with nothing but the joy and pleasure of having some incredible experiences in our life here at this store. I mean, truly, there is no financial gain, but as far as good karma and a lot of love and great memories, we couldn't have asked for more.
On more wintry Saturday afternoons, as the sun goes down in Heartland, you'll find a long line of hungry diners at the First Congregational Church. That's been the home of Heartland's famous roast beef suppers since 1966. The first 100 patrons are seated at 4:30, but people begin arriving around 3. The roast beef supper's most famous fan, the late J.D. Salinger, was often first in line and would read or write while waiting. We recently visited the Heartland Brick Church for a taste of one of their legendary suppers.
Hi, my name is Eric Townsend. I'm from Lebanon, New Hampshire. I started coming here with my parents. This roast beef supper has always been good there. I've never had a bad meal here. The price is right. The service, they're fast. Even though sometimes there's a very long line going twice the length of this hall, going outside, they move people in and out quick. And you can guarantee it being a good meal.
Raymond Menard from Claremont, New Hampshire. I usually come in here and I'll buy a couple extra tickets and just hand them out because it's one of those things you do. You make friends. You know, it's one of the best ways to do it. Right? You know, you get down there and you may sit with your family, but you're going to sit with somebody else too. And the way they've got it, the atmosphere, it's great.
As we come to the close of our coverage of the anniversary of Tropical Storm Irene, we want to take time now to say the names and to remember the 7 people who died as a result of the storm in Rutland, Windsor, and Windham counties. VPR's John Van Hoosen has this remembrance.
The storm changed so many things about Vermont, even the language we use to remember those who died. Swept away are the words in the official records for 20-year-old Ivana Teseva of Macedonia. She'd been part of a work program at Mount Snow. It was late in the morning last August 28th, Sunday, when Ivana Teseva and 2 others came upon rising water on Route 100 in Wilmington. Police said their car quickly became surrounded by the swollen Deerfield River. While the others escaped, including her boyfriend, Teseva was swept away. A bench on a bank above the Deerfield honors her memory with the words, "Our greatest loss remembered." In Rutland Town that Sunday, near the Rutland City Reservoir water intake, father and son, Michael J. and Michael G. Garofano, lost their lives to the raging Mendon Brook. They were 55 and 24 years old. The elder Garofano was the city's water plant manager, and he was checking on the safety of the water supply with his son. They, too, had been swept away. Last September, the lump in Rutland Mayor Chris Lorris's throat was felt by many.
You know, it's extremely easy to speak in platitudes. But words can't convey the caliber of an individual that Michael was. And you can't simply cannot possibly overstate the tragedy associated with his death on a number of levels.
This is All Things Considered on Vermont Public Radio. I'm Neil Charnoff with VPR News. Thousands of Vermonters have lost power as the winds from the leading edge of Hurricane Sandy continue to build. The number of outages climbs by the minute and has topped at least 15,000 at this hour. The strongest wind has yet to arrive. It's gusting at almost 40 miles per hour in Bennington, Brattleboro, and Rutland. But forecasters say the gusts could reach as much as 80 miles per hour. And the areas that are likely to be most heavily affected are the slopes of the Green Mountain Range, especially in southern Vermont, and in the Northeast Kingdom. With memories of Tropical Storm Irene fresh in their minds, state officials and meteorologists have been at pains to say that Sandy is a different kind of storm. They don't expect there to be nearly as much rain as we experienced during Irene. We have a series of reports tonight from reporters stationed around Vermont, first to Waterbury, where the State Emergency Operations Center was fully staffed starting this morning. As VPR's Steve Zind reports, officials continued to warn of the extremely high winds.
Since last week, the state has been warning people to lay in supplies to make it through the widespread power outages that Sandy's high winds are expected to bring tonight. While they continue to stress that Sandy will be nothing like Tropical Storm Irene, Vermont emergency management officials say they're drawing from Irene's lessons to prepare. Public Safety Commissioner Keith Flynn says this time there's better communication with local leaders, legislators, and the public. At the same time, Flynn says the state has been coordinating with local responders.
We've been in contact since the very beginning with local fire departments, and our swift water rescue teams. There are two of them that are going to be ready to go, Colchester Rescue and Hartford. So the relationship that we have with the municipalities, with fire and rescue, and our EMS teams will certainly be a big part of how we respond.
Officials continue to ask the public to make preparations for power outages and to hunker down when the winds hit.
Certainly, we would recommend that during the peak time when the winds are at their strongest, that if you don't have to go somewhere, now'd be a good time to stay at home.
All state police troopers were placed on duty or on standby starting at 5 p.m. today, and hundreds of other state workers have also been mobilized. For VPR News, I'm Steve Zind.
Throughout the state, winds have picked up and the storm has started to show its force. We turn now to VPR's Nina Keck in Rutland County, who has already lost power herself. Nina, what's the situation in your area right now? And we're waiting for Nina Keck. Not quite sure if she's there. All righty. Let's move on to VPR's Fred Bever, who is in Bennington. Fred, we know the wind has been blowing and the rain has been falling for hours now. Can you tell us what the conditions are for you at this hour?
Well, it's blustery. There's been a steady light rain for several hours. I've seen occasional small branches down here and there, but so far it's fairly quiet. It's a bit of a ghost town in Bennington. The lights are on, but I spoke to a waitress at a local restaurant. She's getting ready to close up. She says she hasn't had a table all day.
Now, you spoke to the town manager in Bennington earlier today. What did he have to say?
Well, he talked to me, Stuart Hurd, the town manager, he talked to me about really preparing several days in advance, having the luxury of the long weather forecast, as well as the experience from Irene. So there are new systems in place. 35 volunteers met with Police Chief Paul Doucette, who's also the Emergency Operations Manager, yesterday, getting ready. They've got their Emergency Operations Center set up and fully staffed. They've been in touch with hospitals, so they know how to find people who might lose power, need it for oxygen tanks and that sort of thing. They were concerned about a temporary bridge that was washed out by Irene last year, or the original bridge was washed out. They're less concerned about that now because the rain forecasts don't seem quite as epic as this.
All righty. Fred Bever in Bennington. Fred, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We now turn to Nina Keck. She's in Rutland County, as we mentioned. Nina has herself lost power. Nina, what can you tell us about the situation in your area?
Well, it's interesting. I lost power at about 4:45, and the winds didn't seem to be howling all that much. They kind of come in gusts. But you mentioned, I think, that the wind speeds were up to 40 miles per hour, and that's what Dave Carman, the airport manager at Rutland Southern Vermont Regional Airport, told me, and he's gearing up for top speeds around 70 miles per hour later tonight. One thing I should point out, since the Rutland area is, I think, going to be especially hard hit by this, the Red Cross will be opening a shelter at Rutland Regional Medical Center in their Leahy Conference Rooms, which is in the basement of the hospital. That will open starting at 7 p.m. tonight. If there's overflow at the hospital, folks can seek shelter at Rutland High School. That's going to be a backup. But Cape Air canceled all of their flights in and out of Rutland today and tomorrow. They hope to be back on track on Wednesday. Amtrak's trains have been canceled in and out of Vermont. And who knows when those will get back on track, considering cities all along the eastern seaboard are affected as well. I had an interesting conversation today, Neil, with an insurance agent, and she was just saying that it's been eerily quiet in her office all day, but she and her staff are gearing up for what they assume is going to be a big onslaught of damages, and she said they're trying to figure out how to handle all of that without any technology, without the use of internet, telephones, any sort of technology. So she said, we've got a lot of pens, a lot of paper, a lot of forms, and clipboards, and just trying to figure out how to make sure they can accommodate everybody's needs without what you're used to being able to, you know, flip a switch or pick up the phone.
VPR's Nina Kick in Rutland County. Nina, thanks so much. Stay safe.
Thanks.
I also wanted to mention there are emergency shelters also open at Twin Valley School in Wilmington and at the Mountain School in Wynn Hall. Meanwhile, Brattleboro has also been hit early by the wind and rain. VPR's Nancy Cohen is there. Nancy, can you first describe the scene in Windham County?
Yeah, it's been it's really quiet right now on Main Street in Brattleboro. Earlier today, some stores said they had hardly any business at all, that it was incredibly quiet. But at Brown and Roberts, at the hardware store downtown, they said they had one of the best days of their year with maybe 600 to 700 customers today. And they've sold out of generators. They're trying to get more. There are a lot of people there buying supplies, batteries, flashlights, propane, you name it. That place was hopping. And mostly I found people in good spirits. I also spoke to a couple people on the street just a couple of hours ago. I found a mother and a daughter, a 50-year-old mom, a 28-year-old daughter, who had just run 3 miles and biked 4 miles and had more miles to go. And they said they wanted to burn some calories so they could hunker down and eat snacks and drink hot rum and cider tonight.
Nancy, just very briefly, can you see the river from where you are?
Yes, I'm looking at the river right now. I have Main Street, Brattleboro behind me. I have Connecticut River in front of me. It's raining lightly. It's every once in a while we get a big, big gust of wind right here on the river, but it's not that windy yet.
All righty. VPR's Nancy Cohen covering Hurricane Sandy in Brattleboro. Thank you so much. Finally, we turn to VPR's Charlotte Albright, who has our report from the Northeast Kingdom. Charlotte, the Northeast Kingdom is one of the areas where the highest winds are expected. What's the condition outside right now?
Well, actually, we're in much more of a wait-and-see attitude, I think, than your other reporters. It's kind of an eerie lull. You're right, they are expecting high winds, but they're expecting pockets of high winds, not to just to overspread the area, and they don't know where those pockets are going to be. Interestingly, in the Northeast Kingdom, so many of our utilities are small municipal utilities, so one can have lots of power and the one next door may not. However, Vermont Electric Cooperative has about 1,000 members out, and we're just sort of in a wait-and-see attitude right now, just like everybody else. We've stocked up on generators, we've stocked up on water, and we're just looking out the window. It's not raining here yet. It's a very soft kind of air, kind of spitting, and the clouds are moving. I'm on my deck. The clouds are moving in two directions at once. It's quite bizarre.
Thank you. That's VPR Charlotte Albright in Lindenville. A digital clearinghouse for those looking for help or looking to help that materialized in the wake of Tropical Storm Irene is gearing up again, this time for Hurricane Sandy. As VPR's Kurt Carapezza reports, VTResponse.com is now crowdsourcing reports of damage and power outages as Sandy's dangerous winds continue to increase.
Sarah Waterman, the 29-year-old architect of VT Response, says by now the social media website is a well-oiled machine.
We're basically looking to do the same thing we did sort of in the first days after Irene, just have all the information in one place. So in this case, given what Sandy looks like, it's going to be a lot of outages, downed trees, school cancellations and closures, all of that kind of information.
In the weeks after Irene, the website got more than 500,000 views, about 1,000 posts, and it coordinated hundreds of volunteers. But given current expectations for this storm, Waterman says VT Response will serve as an information sharing hub rather than a volunteer recruiter.
If Sandy is mostly a wind event, so it would be more sharing, you know, power. We know that power is out, power is coming back on, all of those kind of things that happen after a major windstorm.
Waterman stresses that posting reports on VT Response is not a substitute for calling 911. She says the website has an unofficial relationship with the state, complementing other group services to get food, water, and emergency assistance to those communities that are hardest hit. For VPR News, I'm Kirk Carapeza.
As we heard from VPR's Fred Bever earlier, Bennington Town officials and volunteers have been preparing for days for Sandy. The biggest concern had been a temporary bridge erected over Route 9 after a washout during Tropical Storm Irene. Water and sewer plants on the far side of that bridge from Bennington are fully staffed tonight. Cots and blankets are in hand as well. But attention is focused on wind. Police Chief Paul Doucette says the worst is expected between in the next hour and will continue until about 2 in the morning with gusts as high as 80 miles per hour. Chief Doucette and most Bennington residents are expecting extended outages tonight and into the week. Doucette is asking residents to stay in place even with the power out rather than try to get to an emergency shelter. The safest place to be during Hurricane Sandy, he says, is home. And do stay tuned. We will have more updates for you throughout the evening, as well as a special edition of Vermont Edition that's coming up tonight at 7. There's lots of information online at VPR.net where you can track the storm on radar and check in with VPR's Eye on the Sky forecasts.